You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, it's day 301 of the world's most stringent and economically damaging lockdown. The brand father, Jeremy Sampson, MD of Brand Finance Africa, is on the line. And it's all about the US of A tonight. Jeremy, how was that inauguration? Welcome.
Good evening, Michael. Good evening, your listeners. Yes, we've got to the end of the Trump era. Fortunately, I must say I sighed with relief yesterday when yesterday was over, because I think a lot of us, right up to the point that Trump was still president, expected there might be some sort of a, I don't know, reprise, revenge, call it what you like.
You wouldn't believe it, Jeremy, but those adherents to QAnon still believe that something is amiss. If you read some of those conspiracy boards, they're saying that Joe Biden took the oath a few minutes before 12. And if you read the Constitution, that means he's not really the president. And actually, Trump is still the president. And where's my tinfoil hat? It's crazy. And hopefully we could start putting a bit of that behind us. What I really loved was that inauguration speech. And we'll also come to the young poet laureate. But Joe Biden's inaugural address was, I mean, beyond well-written. It was powerful. It had these rhetorical flourishes and inspiring themes. And according to one speechwriter who worked with Biden while he served as vice president, he knows that words matter, I'd say.
Absolutely. I've seen a few of his speeches, and sometimes I have to say, and I know he's had a speech impediment, which sometimes comes to the fore, but for the most part he's conquered. And he's come across as weak and a bit wishy-washy, whereas yesterday he came across strongly and forceful as the leader of the largest nation in the world when it comes to the free world. And he made some excellent points, as you say. And I think, you know, the whole spirit of the inauguration was very polished to start with, and given what's been going on in Washington, that to start with is a miracle. But he made so many strong points. And you know, like all these things, it's important to mention the things he didn't mention, like impeachment, but it was all about the positive, yeah, about hope. And the key word, as you said, was unite. Unite, unite, we can do this together. But I can't believe, to be honest, the hypocrisy of some of the members of the GOP. I think I'm right in saying I saw Ted Cruz walking into the inauguration area. And given what he was saying in the House, only a week ago, and some of the others as well, the hypocrisy and the lying is still there. And as you say, I believe that there are something like 70% of all Republican senators still believe that the election was stolen.
Don't get me started on Senator Ted Cruz. Did you see his tweet about the Paris Climate Agreement? He's saying that Americans shouldn't be beholden to what the people of Paris think about the climate. Excuse me? Has he heard of the Geneva Convention? Does he believe that that's the views of the citizens of Geneva? I mean, it's crazy. It really is to think that someone like that is a senator. He could probably serve in the cabinet of Cyril Ramaphosa.
Well, he's giving Texas a bad name as well. But as you say, you know, what is it with these politicians? The hypocrisy, the lying, the brazen lying, being in denial. No, Trump is totally in denial still, we're told. There have been some Twitter jokes, and I think they are jokes flying around, and you've probably seen them, of what exactly did he say in his letter, allegedly, to President Biden, but I won't repeat them on air.
Never underestimate the stupidity of populist politicians, I think, is the lesson from all of this. Coming back to the speech and that theme of unity, and from a branding perspective, his great challenge was to unite this deeply divided country that had fought this very uncivil war through this election battle. And it does seem that every election over the last while has ratcheted up the temperature between the blue and the red states in America. And he decided that now was the time for unity to be the big theme. How important is it for a brand to have this one overarching narrative to build trust, to tie everything together? He used the word unity 8 times in that 21-minute speech.
But I think we know that anyone that is united, and whether that's a sports team, the management of a company, all of these things help that entity be stronger and be a winning formula. The minute you have a fractured, a divided management or whatever, you know, we have a divided political party running this country at the moment, and we can all see the results of that. So you really need to bring everyone together. But no, the fact of the matter is that just seeing the three former presidents with him, and you know, that was magnificent to start with, showing that they were all aligned and supportive of him. But you look at the results over the last 25 years, they've all been very, very close. People forget that Bush Jr. only got in from Al Gore after a standoff that went on for many weeks as well. But at least then Al Gore conceded, and he was magnanimous, and he went away. He let Bush get on with it. Whereas this time we've got something totally different. And I think Biden at least has had a lifetime in politics. He's had, 8 years as vice president. He's been around the block. He's got the T-shirts, call it whatever you like. So he has the understanding. And I have to say that looking at some of the team that have been on display already today, he's got a very young, dynamic press corps to start with, and people who I think are going to, blending with his experience and knowledge, be a formidable team. But just seeing the document that they published today, not yesterday, today, about how they're going to tackle COVID after they found there was no plan in place, you see of the key objectives, the very first objective is something, Michael, we talk about all the time, rebuilding trust. And that's quite an indictment of where they are at the moment.
Yeah, quite an indictment indeed. There were many other powerful rhetorical tools that he used in the speech. Lots of repetition. He used alliteration very well. There were these sweeping, soaring, overarching narratives that reminded me a lot of his close friend and political colleague, Barack Obama. So one wonders how much he may have consulted with his good friend in writing the speech. But I'm given to believe that he does pace around and he tends to dictate these and polish them over time, and something he's been doing his entire career. I agree with you, he's never quite come across as powerfully and forcefully as he did yesterday. So he certainly stood up to this historical moment. But that's not to say he comes without serious flaws. And I think cancelling the Keystone Pipeline is a major decision, one of his first decisions. And obviously climate change is a massive concern. But US energy independence helps the US play a far more independently strategic role in global geopolitics. And I hope that his aides are reminding him of that fact. Read a fascinating book over the holidays, and it details the rise of shale oil and shale liquid natural gas and how critical it is, not only as a bridging fuel until renewables are able to deliver power all of the time at a baseload level, but it's critical to US geopolitical leadership to help it outmaneuver the Russians and the Chinese, and also play a smarter role in the Middle East. So I just hope that he isn't so overzealous about climate change that he actually forgets that there are some things, some real politic that just has to be done, as unpalatable as it might be to a particular group or faction inside his own party.
I totally agree with you, but I think also, given how he's been seasoned, he's a pragmatic person. He understands politics. They say he's very good at reaching across the aisle and getting consensus, and he's going to need all those skills and more. And you know, despite 8 years as vice president, that's not even then going to prepare you for the role as the president. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he works and how he moves. And you know, as someone said, often you talk about a 100-day honeymoon period. Well, he hasn't got that. He's already in up to his neck, as he showed on his first evening there, signing off all those papers. He's hitting the ground running. He's got a team of total professionals who've hit the ground running with him. And so far, they're aligned. But what? We're talking the first 30 hours or so of the presidency. So I think most people around the world will wish him wind at his back, as they say, because yeah, he's got an awful lot to do, and he's got to pull things together. And Trump has not gone away.
And neither has Trumpism, neither has a lot of that nationalism. He didn't sugarcoat it. There is still a lot of healing to do, a lot of work to do. But as we've only got around 30 seconds left, Jeremy, we can't help but draw parallels between the ANC and what's going on in America right now. I mean, the ANC couldn't fight its way out of a paper bag, to quote Peter Bruce. I mean, he just picked up the phone, called Moderna, and got through to the guy who actually makes the decisions here. I mean, not that we want the Moderna vaccine. It is one of the more expensive ones. But what has the ANC been doing?
Well, they've been on holiday. It's been Christmas, Michael, don't you know? You know, you go and have a little bit of a break whilst the rest of the world has moved on, and suddenly we find, oh, we're at the back of the queue. And meanwhile, whilst we're at the back of the queue, South Africans, good South Africans, are dying. That's the reality of what's happened here. And Peter showed that, you know, in this world, the old-fashioned thing of picking up the phone still works. Well, boy, you know, if he has to do that, and then he cuts through and finds he's talking to a South African who he knows, you know, and that should also help us. But the ANC, I'm afraid at the moment, is a lost cause. They're all busy in meetings and NEC meetings. What's actually happening? But we must just nod our hat to Jackson and Tembo. Rest in peace today, and to his family, because by all accounts, he was a good man. He was a man who stood up for ethics and rights and could reach around to all different parties. So it's rather sad to see a good man be a victim of COVID.
Absolutely. Another one who could reach across the aisle, one of the few good men inside the ANC. May he rest in peace, and obviously our condolences to his friends and family. Jeremy, as always, with The Brands and Sense, thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.